I'm Eva Hartling. Welcome back to the Brightest Female Podcast. Today, we're tackling an issue that's holding Canada back, our entrepreneurship gap, especially when it comes to women-led businesses. Despite years of investment, progress has been painfully slow, and the numbers tell a troubling story. Entrepreneurship is in decline, self-employment has dropped, and gender-based barriers are costing the economy up to $180 billion in lost potential. To make matters worse, Canadian entrepreneurs are also navigating rising costs, supply chain disruptions, and trade barriers, including tariffs, that further limit growth. While the impact of tariffs on GDP is estimated at 2.6% annually, the entrepreneurship gap is costing us even more. To unpack this, I'm joined by Marwa Abdu today. She's a senior research director at the Canadian Chamber of Commerce. Marwa has spent her career championing financial inclusion, gender equity, and private sector growth, working with organizations like the World Bank and OECD. She's here to break down the findings of the Chamber's latest report, Women Entrepreneurs, Canada's Biggest Missed Business Opportunity. And she talks about what it will take to finally move the needle. If we have the talent and resources to thrive, why are women entrepreneurs still left behind? And what needs to happen to change that? Let's get into it. This season of our podcast is brought to you by TD Bank Group Women in Enterprise. TD helps women in business achieve success and growth through its program of educational workshops, financing, and mentorship. Visit thebrennysfemale.com/podcast and follow the link to find out how TD can help you. Marwa, it's such a pleasure having you on The Brennys Female today. Thank you for making time to speak with me.
Thank you for having me.
We're here to talk about a topic that is, very timely and at the forefront of everyone's mind, especially entrepreneurs right now. I'm grateful that we have you as an expert to comment on this. But before we get into that conversation, I want to start this interview with you as I usually do with most guests on The Brennys Female. And I'm going to ask you to go back in time a little bit so we get to know who you are and how you ended up in the role that you're in today. I want to begin by asking, growing up, what kind of career were you imagining for yourself in the future? What kind of profession did you think you would end up doing? And what was it connected at all to what you're actually doing today?
What an interesting question. Yeah, I remember my earliest memories. So I'm the daughter of Canadian immigrants. We immigrated when I was very young, about 6 or 7. And a lot of my formative memories, I had the great fortune of traveling a lot as a child and because of my parents' career, and was exposed to a lot of different languages and cultures. And I think, you know, my earliest memories, I remember that I wanted to be a teacher. I was always asking questions about the world and, you know, why certain people lived in inequality and why others had great fortunes. And I was just curious about what was happening around me all the time. And so for me, that has, while I didn't end up becoming a teacher, I feel like I'm still asking a lot of those questions in my career. And it's really been a very interesting and winding road. It hasn't followed a linear path whatsoever. I started out I did my undergrad in business in Kingston, Ontario, at Queen's University. And shortly after, you know, as somebody who grew up being exposed to the world at large, I felt that Kingston was just way too small for me. So I was ready to just spread my wings. And immediately I spent 6 months in Ghana, working for a microcredit organization called Global Mamas. That was in 2008. And I began knowing that my heart had always been in international development. I wanted to be in the field working with women and underrepresented communities. And I really dig into a lot of the questions that we're still asking of, you know, development economists today. That then took me to a number of different opportunities. I went back, I did my degree in economics. After that, spent a couple of years doing the business thing, was in Ernst & Young, then did my master's and, you know, worked after that for the OECD, the World Bank, and really focused on, the nexus of international trade and development. After that, I started focusing a little bit more on private sector development, bringing in that niche of small businesses and SMEs and empowering underserved and underrepresented communities. It's still the work and the focus and the heart of what I do today. I'm just tackling it from a different standpoint. But I'm a researcher at heart and a storyteller at heart, and I'm still asking myself really hard questions.
Love that so much. And it's such an important role today. You know, many of our listeners are women entrepreneurs. This kind of work and the kind of research that you do is really key to understanding and addressing some of the challenges that we have as women in business. And I think this is helpful to entrepreneurs in general. We're actually here today because the Chamber of Commerce of Canada released a new report, and there's a lot of interesting, you know, findings and insight, and you're releasing it at a time where new tariffs just got imposed on Canadian goods being exported into the U.S. For anyone following the news and anyone in business, that's been a topic, you know, on everybody's mind, and it's proving to be a major challenge and a major obstacle for most businesses in Canada as the U.S.'s biggest trading partner. I think there's very few business owners or even consumers that are not going to be affected or are not already affected by this reality. So first, I want to talk about and kind of frame the report and the research that you've just released. And you want to tell me a little bit about the strategy behind it and maybe some of the main insights. And for you, working on this research, what's the most relevant, what's the most interesting in terms of the findings that you've just released?
Yeah, a couple of things. So for context, the report is a follow-on from our 2024 report, which we published last year around International Women's Day, called Barely Breaking Ground. At the time, I was really inspired by a piece of data that I had seen the UN Secretary General publish. It was the amount of years that it would take for us to reach global parity. And it was an absolutely absurd number, like we're not going to reach equal for another 100 years. It gave me a lot of pause. And I said, well, I want to mimic that exercise and think about where we stood in Canada, and particularly where women in management and women in business in formal employment stood. I did an analysis that looked at representation and compensation across Canadian provinces and territories, looking at different management positions up until senior management, as well as board representation. We found was that there was a significant amount of work that, you know, despite, you know, Canada, I think, prides itself on women's economic empowerment. It's a big part of our identity. But when you look at the data and the numbers, it gives you a lot of pause and it tells you a different story. We've devoted a lot of funds and resources towards closing those gaps, but we haven't been successful. If we continue on the path we have been on, we will not be reaching full equity and parity in this century, which means that our daughters, our great-granddaughters will not be seeing a world where they have equal opportunity, equal pay in management positions. This new report looks into having been exposed to a lot of women entrepreneurs as a senior research director for the Business Data Lab of the Canadian Chamber of Commerce. I've traveled a lot around Canada, presented at a lot of conferences. I've had the opportunity to be exposed to a lot of women-owned businesses, women entrepreneurs. I came back to Canada from living outside of it for 15 years in 2022. And it's been such an eye-opening experience in terms of learning about the immense work that women entrepreneurs are doing on the ground, but also the immense untapped potential that we continue to leave behind. And so this report, I was really inspired into digging more into that data. The theme for this year for International Women's Day is accelerate action. And so immediately when I hear that, I think, okay, when I think of action, what are the questions that come to mind? They're very simple, fundamental questions. Where have we been? Where are we today? Where are we going, and how can we get there faster if we're not there already? When you delve into that data, you begin to reveal some pretty salient insights into the current landscape of women entrepreneurs and women-owned businesses. particularly the barriers that continue to limit women's entrepreneurial potential. That includes structural biases, it includes limited access to financing, sector-specific underrepresentation. We're still seeing so much of that play out, even though we're in 2025. To answer your question in terms of some of the findings, at the overarching level, what we found was that in 2018, the government had set aside a significant budget of $2 billion Canadian dollars to advance women's entrepreneurship through Canada's first women's entrepreneurship strategy. That really builds on the government's empowerment agenda and introduces a whole of government approach that positions women entrepreneurship as this integral part of Canada's growth strategy. And the goal at the time was to double the number of women-owned businesses by 2025. When we actually dug into the data, the findings were we have not doubled the number of women-owned businesses. In fact, we've only increased that number by about 20,000 businesses over the past 6 or 7 years, which is nothing. And even when you talk about doubling the number of women-owned businesses, that still does not close the gender entrepreneurship gap.
Yeah.
In 2025, the share of women-owned businesses in Canada is 18%. It's not good at all.
Not going in the right direction.
No, that's less than 1 in 5 businesses that are majority women-owned, which is quite abysmal. When you layer that with some of the data that we got from their Missing Entrepreneurs report of 2023, you start to also piece together insights in terms of where women fall off along the pipeline of entrepreneurship, what stops them from progressing from early stage entrepreneurship to scaling up their businesses and maturing their businesses to the point that they can actually claim market share and success and contribute the productive and innovative capacity that we in Canada are so desperately in need of today more than ever. So, you know, the findings really anchor us. There's industry findings in terms of where women-owned businesses are concentrated in Canada. Not shockingly, 60% of women-owned businesses are concentrated in industries like healthcare, retail sectors, professional services. Women continue to be, you know, significantly behind in industries like construction, transportation, sort of the heavy technological sectors and manufacturing that really make up a significant portion of Canada's GDP. And it's not for lack of women being not educated and not having the entrepreneurial potential to contribute to those sectors. It has very much to do with a lot of regulatory burdens, you know, these archaic gender stereotypes that we're still holding on to about who is going to succeed in certain industries based on gender stereotypes and structural biases versus who is not. And so it's very clear that even in 2025, we're still grappling with issues that we've been dealing with for decades.
Not much has changed in terms of the systemic barriers to women having the same opportunities as men in the entrepreneurship space. There's a figure you refer to in the report, and you're calling out that Canada's missing 710,000 majority women-owned businesses. So I want to know how you got to that number. But you're also calling out that there's half as many people launching businesses as 20 years ago. There is a reality, and you talked about some of the factors that mean there's not enough women launching new businesses, and we were already starting with a lower number. Where does that number come from? How did you estimate the 710,000? I want to get into the major obstacles, because I think, and this is a conversation we've had a lot on this podcast with women entrepreneurs themselves, but lack of financing, limited access to financing seems to be the number one major obstacle. But let's talk about the number first. How did you estimate?
The missing entrepreneurs figure, what do we mean by missing entrepreneurs? Definition really matter. And I think so much of the conversation around DEI needs to be anchored in common shared values and definitions. I'm always a big fan of having that conversation first before we dig into the metrics. as I mentioned, there was an OECD report called The Missing Entrepreneurs in 2023. And what it did was examine people from underrepresented groups who are not involved in entrepreneurship, but could be. Their estimate was that the share of missing entrepreneurs, of actual entrepreneurs in Canada, is 26%. Of that 26%, 78% of those missing entrepreneurs are women. Canada has a higher share of women missing entrepreneurs than the OECD average. If we were to calculate what that 26% is based on existing entrepreneurs from the latest data, that brings us to an estimate of around 910,000 missing entrepreneurs in Canada. And that's men and women, if we are to choose those binary definitions of gender. If we take 78% of that figure, then that's how we arrive at the 710,000. These are the best we could do in terms of estimates. The important thing in this conversation is that we remind ourselves that the better data we have, the more able we are to anchor ourselves on those questions I mentioned earlier. Where have we been? Where are we? Where are we going? Are we actually closing the gaps that we want to close in terms of those figures? The needle is always moving and evolving. I think it is important for us to measure success in those figures rather than saying, we've devoted $2 billion to empowering women entrepreneurs. Let's actually look at the numbers. Has that $2 billion reaped the results and the targets that we said that we wanted to reap? And so I think, I hope that that answers your question in terms of how that figure came about. Now, it's important for us, you mentioned access to financing being a barrier to women's entrepreneurship. Yes, access to financing remains one of the top reasons women entrepreneurs continue to struggle and have barriers in terms of gaining traction in entrepreneurship. But actually what we found from the data is that it even extends beyond that. The data shows that fear and lack of appropriate skills disproportionately impact women as barriers compared to men, particularly the fear of actually starting a business and taking on that venture prohibits and inhibits women from actually taking on that leap. And that's higher in Canada than the OECD average. When I say fear here, I'm talking about fear of failure, fear of not succeeding. I think that's important for us to anchor ourselves. I think there are a myriad of reasons, lack of access to resources and education that extends not just in women entering entrepreneurship, but in sustaining their businesses. We make it unnecessarily burdensome on businesses to figure out how to succeed, to access resources. It's not for lack of programs. It's not for lack of grants. It's not for lack of resources that are available. It's that we expect businesses who are already resource strapped, when you're talking about a small business or a business that just started that has one or two employees, to focus on sustaining a business while dealing with tax and regulatory burdens in terms of filing paperwork, in terms of figuring out how to access the kind of financing. If they're not able to get guarantees, then how are they supposed to juggle that while also trying to get a business off the ground and running? So I think this is a very nuanced conversation.
There's usually a multitude of factors that explain a certain reality, and it's not all black and white. You've mentioned that Canada lagged behind underdeveloped countries in terms of the number of women entrepreneurs, but I think this highlights the lack of support towards women entrepreneurs, or the right support that's not in place. What could we learn from other nations that are doing well in this space, that where we see a larger number of thriving women entrepreneurs compared to us?
Yeah, I think there are a number of things that are important to think about here. We need to break down the policy recommendations that we talk about in the report. I mentioned skills and training. I cannot emphasize that enough. We need to review and clarify the definitions that we have in the Women's Entrepreneurship Strategy and make sure that it's aligned with criteria internationally. We need to think about how that aligns in terms of our goals and targets, and how we can improve and prioritize women-owned businesses' access to the full suite of federally funded programs. We need to really, particularly at a time where the pace of technological advancement is outpacing our ability to keep up with it. Even if you're not looking at racialized or underrepresented groups who statistically have a harder time accessing that training and skill development, we need to really think about how we can include early STEM education and strengthen women's digital literacy and their skills and adoption. We need to think about what we can take off of entrepreneurs' plates to free up space so that they can succeed and do better. That includes thinking stagnantly about one stage of entrepreneurship. We need to think about the entrepreneurship life cycle. It's not just about getting women into entrepreneurship. It's that we need to continue allowing them to progress along that life cycle. And going back to the greater picture that's happening in Canada, we know that Canada has a massive entrepreneurship problem. And that is for not just women, for Canada as a whole. We know that when we look at business dynamism, it's declining. The rate of businesses entering markets is being exceeded by the rate that businesses are exiting. And especially in this critical moment where we are looking down the pipeline of a potential recession, mm-hmm. where it is going to be harder for businesses to thrive. Mm-hmm. And now the fire is lit under governments where they're trying to lift interprovincial trade barriers. It's not for lack of knowing that those things were prohibiting us from maximizing our potential economically and productively. But we were looking beneath our feet and remaining apathetic, thinking this is good enough. We were dragging our feet to the hard work. And we really need to get to the hard work. We need to ask some questions that might come back with answers that are complicated and will require time and require an all hands on deck approach in terms of actually figuring out tangible solutions to addressing these problems once and for all. So skills and training is one. I want to also call out things like mentorship. I want to call out things like reducing institutional and administrative barriers and improving institutional conditions. That includes family and tax policy.
Yeah.
Last year's report that I mentioned, what there was an interesting finding for me that gave me a lot of pause was, as we were comparing the compensation of women in particular industries, women were making a fraction of what their male counterparts were making, irrespective of whether the representation they had gotten close to parity in those industries or not. Mm-hmm. Even in industries where women were doing better, so that is healthcare, that's retail, all of those industries I mentioned earlier, we saw that women were saying, even when there's representation and I'm having an easier time making it up the ladder, I would rather just leave and start my own business. But at the same time, that doesn't free them from a host of other problems just talked about. So I think either way, when you think about the progress of women, be it in formal employment or in entrepreneurship, women are not free from barriers to progress across the pipeline.
Are you ready to be inspired and connected? I'm really excited to share that we have officially launched the Brand is Female Conversation Series. Come and join us for a monthly conference that's changing the game in Montreal, Vancouver, and Toronto. Engage with fellow women thought leaders, innovators, and visionaries. Get ready for insightful discussions and powerful networking opportunities presented by TD Women in Enterprise. Visit our website, go to the events section, and secure your spot today. I can't wait to meet you in person. And now let's talk about the looming recession. We've been hit by tariffs that are affecting Canadian goods going into the U.S. And then there's the scenario where our goods coming into Canada from the U.S. are taxed at a higher rate with tariffs imposed by our own country, which affects business owners. This is raising costs for small businesses. How would you say these are disproportionately affecting women-owned businesses specifically, especially those in retail, e-com, manufacturing to a certain degree? We also know that women entrepreneurs that operate in sectors like food, beauty, and fashion, which sell to the U.S. in large numbers, but also rely on goods being imported into Canada. So have you looked at, what impact is this going to have on women specifically?
We don't have the numbers about the particular impact on women, but we know that women will be disproportionately impacted because they're already being left out of critical resources and conversations that they need to be included in. Even when we look at the research and the data, we know that women have a propensity to succeed in exports. Women have the ability to be innovative and think outside the box in ways that they can market products. They have more statistically a lot of attunement in terms of their clients and their markets. And I think that there is a huge untapped potential in terms of women's ability to export, period. And so I think when we think about that and we think about what's happening south of the border, it's important, you know, one of the jarring figures that we state at the onset of the report is when we actually looked at, we wanted to quantify, and this is based on initial data from ICED. And the data was telling us that effectively in 2017, ICED had estimated that if we had closed the persistent gender entrepreneurship gap in Canada, that would have meant that we would have had an increase in GDP of 6% or more over that specific period, just over 6 or 7 years. When we actually look at that number, we're saying that we have effectively lost out on $150 billion and up to $180 billion in economic potential. That's foregone opportunity. That's foregone potential that could have cushioned us against economic blows that we've been weathering over that period of time. And so when you think about equipping women for exports and how that can then open up a whole treasure chest of opportunities in terms of innovation, in terms of other markets that women can tap into. And I think it's also important to think about this from a broader perspective. When we talk about women, we're not just talking about non-racialized women. We're talking about immigrant women, indigenous women, visible minorities, LGBTQ+ communities. When you think about the richness of diversity and perspectives, international expertise, languages, cultures, you are already tapping into their natural ability to access markets that you wouldn't otherwise have. And we haven't done a good job of that at all. So it's not just that we're leaving women behind, we're leaving women and intersectional groups behind from this potential.
What would you say is the opportunity then? I like to think that in a period of crisis, there's always an opportunity, especially for business people. When women are looking at this and kind of bridging with what you just brought up around the opportunity to tap into new market, what's a solution here with women that women entrepreneurs should be considering if they're feeling especially affected by the tariffs being put in place?
Well, I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all solution. But when I think about what women entrepreneurs have control over, they have control over where they can go with their products. I would encourage women entrepreneurs to really think outside the box. Yes, the U.S. served as a natural market that they can go to outside of Canada. It's the largest market. Ease and the ability to trade and access that diverse pool of clientele. It's easy to look to the U.S. and say, well, I don't need to look elsewhere. But I would encourage women to think more broadly. We don't live in a world anymore where Canada and the U.S. are each other's best allies.
And that's a huge shift. I think already that's a reality that we need to accept. And for many business owners, it's a huge change.
Absolutely. And it's a reality that I think we have been talking about for years. Because the reliance on the U.S. market and the level of integration was scary for a day like this.
Yes.
You know, when it's good, it's good. But when you have policies that come out overnight where you have a blanket slate 25% tariff that is applied because we have, you know, effectively like a presidential bully. Who's making those decisions based on false data or whatever it may be, and rhetoric, spewing rhetoric against DEI for his administration's own purposes. I think it's important for us to have diversified. And I think that's a conversation that the Canadian government has been embarking on, albeit very glacially and slowly. I think when you think about potential markets like Asia, like Africa, there's so much potential there. And there's so much, you know, ready-made diversity that so much to offer. Europe. And I think we have a lot of data that allows us to understand those congruencies in markets with Stats Can. There's a quarterly survey called the Canadian Survey on Business Conditions, which is also where we get a lot of the proprietary data in the report in terms of industries and geography breakdowns. We're able to provide a lens on women entrepreneurs and underrepresented groups that doesn't really exist anywhere in the Canadian marketplace. We're very proud of that because I think it's important for us to have access to that data and research and analysis. The survey gives us a line of sight in terms of what's at the forefront of businesses' minds on a quarterly basis. That includes everything from challenges to trade-related decisions, which markets they're looking to trade with, what are the reasons that they're able to trade with those markets, and what are the barriers in terms of trading with those markets. I would encourage your listeners and those who are trying to tap into understanding where the needle is to really keep an eye out for those reports. We publish them on a quarterly basis on our website at businessdatalab.ca. I think that's a really good marker in terms of seeing where the needle is moving. I would encourage women entrepreneurs to tap into community. There are a lot of women entrepreneurs that I've spoken to who have struggled through those early entrepreneurship stages, but who are willing to mentor and are open to doing it because they know how hard it is to navigate, you know, these challenges and these barriers, let alone to do it in industries and in geographies where those barriers are more pronounced and more persistent. I think there's so many amazing women entrepreneurs are doing great work in Canada. We just need more of them.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of that, what would you like the government to implement in terms of policy? And your research calls out policy changes that would help support women entrepreneurs and entrepreneurship in general in Canada over the next few years. But now with the lens of tariffs being implemented, the relationship between Canada and the U.S. being jeopardized the way it is now, what would you like to see the government act on in priority over the next few months or the next year at least?
I think that we're in a moment in time where we really can't afford to leave anybody behind. And I think more than ever, we need to have conversations with women entrepreneurs, particularly from underrepresented groups. We need to go to the heart of Canada. We need to go to the places where those entrepreneurs are. We quantify where they could be, those missing entrepreneurs. The bulk of them, 60% of them, are in Ontario and Quebec. That doesn't mean that we need to just fixate on Ontario and Quebec, but we need to dig deeper beyond the numbers. I think the government needs to do a better job in terms of having more multi-stakeholder conversations to bring people at the table, whether it's from NGOs, whether it's from local, provincial, national chambers of commerce. We need to really be specific in terms of tackling. It's almost like this tumbleweed where you don't know where you start and you have to just pick at the thread and keep pulling at the thread and peel back the layers one by one. I think it's tempting to throw blanket solutions and say, here's X amount of dollars towards these programs and hope that we'll devote them to what we've always devoted them to. We aren't using data and metrics to measure our progress. We're not seeing whether these dollars are being invested effectively in the right communities. We need to think more broadly. Like I said, just lifting barriers to women being involved in entrepreneurship. So really moving the needle in terms of tax policies, family policies, providing childcare, making it less cumbersome on women to have these conversations and to really take the burdens off their plate so they can be free to do what they do best, which is bring their talent, their innovation, their creativity, their passion to the foreground and for them to adequately flourish in industries where they're being blocked out. And that mm-hmm. also includes skills and training and a lot of the things that we mentioned.
Well, and it's interesting to see this movement, Shop Canadian, which really should have been something we started before this war on tariffs. It feels like we didn't have the right measures in place to support our own economy. Now we're turning around and saying we should have planned this. They were seeing us coming. And obviously investing in technology is one of the big elements here. And is this something, you know, for women, and you talk about sectors where women are still underrepresented, sectors where typically entrepreneurs or small businesses in Canada can reach higher levels of profitability and growth, including the technology category. So was this the right time for women to be investing in technology or to be considering launching businesses in that sector?
You know, one of the things I'm constantly taken back by is the resourcefulness of women in times of hardship. And it's not just small businesses. I mean, we have done a lot of research on small businesses. We've looked at technologies. We had a publication called Portrait of Small Businesses in Canada, and we looked at what were businesses, you know, during the pandemic, where, you know, at a time where businesses had less resources than ever, and they were forced to shift how and who they were serving in their business. And we were seeing, even though these businesses were resource strapped, businesses with four employees or less were being very precise in terms of investing in particular technologies that were going to allow them to survive this period of time. And something that we have to remember, when businesses invest in technology, when you make the decision to invest in technology, you have a long-term mindset. When you invest in technology, the benefit you're going to get, you're not going to fully tap into it within the first year. It's a benefit you're going to reap, because you're not just investing in the technology, you're investing in the training, the education, people who know how to use the technology. And you're transitioning a way of doing business. And that just takes time. And particularly when you're thinking about early stage entrepreneurship in terms of the size of business, that plays a huge role. So to answer your question, I don't think that women should be shy in terms of investment, but I think that they need to be incredibly precise in terms of what technologies are going to allow them to maximize that potential. That also means that governments and support programs available for women are able to actually provide the guidance, be it industry level guidance or geographical level guidance, mostly industry level guidance. And depending on which industry you're in, depending on the type of business that you have, you're going to have particular types of technologies that you need to invest in over others. I think having access to those resources, to that education, to that advisory and consultation, be it from other women entrepreneurs in the industry, peers who are, you know, further along the life cycle, so to speak, or industry experts who are going to look at your business and say, I think you can really benefit from starting to use AI technologies and cutting back on particular tasks that you are devoting yourself to in the day, so that it frees up time and space for you to do other tasks, particularly if you're a business of one or two employees. Right. So don't be shy. Technology is there to help us, not to take away from us. Yes, it is an investment, but this is the time to invest in yourself. Just make sure that you are doing the best that you can, that you are being as precise as possible in terms of what technologies and having the education to back that up.
Wonderful advice. Thank you so much, Marwa, for sharing your insights into the research that was just released, and for providing that snapshot of the reality of small businesses owned by women in Canada. There's an important call to action here. We'll link to the research and your website for anyone who's interested in learning more. And I look forward to staying in touch and continuing to draw on your findings and seeing what pulse you're taking from the industry. Thank you for all the great advice for women in business today.
Thank you so much, Eva. I really am grateful for the work that you're doing and this podcast, which is such a great resource and provides so many enriching conversations and vantage points on female entrepreneurship and empowerment. I think more than ever, we need to really rally around each other and emphasize the importance of this work.
Thank you so much for listening to the Brand is Female podcast. Please don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thank you to TD Women and Enterprise for their support of The Brand is Female. You've got it in you to succeed. Let TD help guide you. Visit thebrandisfemale.com to learn more.